Claudia. I'm an alcoholic. Well, it is Claudia. Thank you, and welcome to the newcomers, and thank you, Tracy, for asking me to participate. My sobriety date is February 24th, 1998. It is not my first sobriety, but I'm hoping that it's my last. I have a sponsor, and my home group is the Pacific Group, and for those three things, I will forever be grateful. I am a million times a different person than when I got here 26 years ago. I'm just going to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I'd like to thank Bobby for awesome and for calling me out, 13-stepping him. And but it worked out. Not the norm, but it worked out. And, I mean, can you blame me, ladies? I mean, come on, right? So, let's see, I grew up in Granada Hills. I am 1,000% a Valley girl. I never really drank because I wanted friends or, you know, I always had a lot of friends. I just loved drinking for the effect. I'm a little bit nervous, which is so, I know. Thank you. And I want to welcome all the newcomers. You know, this is awesome here. AA is alive and well. There's so many young people here. I mean, this is good. Good job here. And it makes me feel, you know, a little bit more at ease. So let's see. I grew up pretty privileged, and, you know, we didn't want for anything. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. We had a live-in housekeeper / nanny / narc. Her name was Elvira, and she was this little teeny woman, and she was mean. And, you know, from the beginning, I've always been a liar, a cheater, and, you know, way more on the shady side than not the shady side. I'm still kind of shady, so not a lot has changed. I just don't take the action. But, you know, I started drinking when we were pretty young. I think I might have been like 11 years old. And, you know, we're from Chile. My family's Chilean. And so there's a lot of acceptance in drinking as long as you do it in the home, right? So that wasn't ever really an issue. It was, you know, when you go outside of the house and bad things start to happen. I, you know, had a lot of parties at my house, a lot of shenanigans. I mean, by the time I was 14 years old, I had already crashed 3 cars. I was put in 2 teenage adolescent programs, full lockdown. I think I might be the only person ever to bring my father to his knees. You know, I was just bad. And by the time I was 12, I was smoking weed on a regular basis. I mean, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but unfortunately, or fortunately, drugs is a big part of my deal. And when you're at Pacific Group, they don't let you really talk about all that. So here, I'm gonna talk about it. I always thought, like, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that, I had a really tough childhood. You know, my parents were really strict, and, you know, boys could do everything, girls could do nothing, and my dad had, like, a hold on me because, you know, I'm the only girl. I have 2 brothers, and, you know, he was just, like, on me all the time, and he was very verbally abusive, no physical or, you know, there wasn't drinking in my house. We had a pretty, like, normal household, except for all the yelling and screaming and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it wasn't until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I realized my life was actually not that bad. And, I was really young when I started sneaking out of my house because, again, my parents were really, well, my father was strict. And we lived in a really nice neighborhood, and it was really hard for my parents to keep me indoors at night. And so, but it was kind of like not cool to put bars on your window in that neighborhood. So he had somebody come out, and they put like these really pretty wood slats all on the whole front of the house, right? So I couldn't get out. And me being a creative little, you know, baby alcoholic, I sought a couple out from the top and the bottom, and then I'd just pop them out, sneak out, come back in, pop them back in, and I did that for a long time until, you know, I got caught. And it was always pretty PG, you know, I never really did a lot of, I mean, the only bad thing I was doing was drinking and smoking weed, you know, and sneaking out. You know, life moves on, and I get put into this treatment center. I was 15 years old, and it was, you know, a full lockdown facility in Northridge, and they would bring these alcoholics in to come, panels to come and talk to us, and, you know, you have all these, you know, 14 and 15-year-olds in there, and you just, I couldn't, you know, identify, because you know, I didn't have a driver's license. I did crash cars, but I wasn't, you know, doing the stuff that they were talking about. I hadn't got there yet. And so that kind of just went over my head. And, you know, I was about maybe 15, and I would run away all the time for months, you know. And my father would, you know, try to get me to come back home, and it was going to be different, and, you know, but it was never different, because I was going, I mean, if they brought me back, I was there, you know, so I was the problem. And, you know, my older brother, he was completely opposite of me. He did everything he was supposed to be doing, you know, like he went to school, and he did his homework, and, you know, he just did it, and I just couldn't do it. I could not listen to my father, no matter what. If he said, go that way, I would go that way. You know, it was like we were constantly like this, and finally, I was about 17 years old, and I left home for the last time, you know, and in my household, when I left, I was completely cut off. So I'm this 17-year-old kid who, really, I have no life skills. I don't know how to do anything. I've never had a job, except I did work at Chuck E. Cheese when I was 15, and, you know, I was completely not ready for life, and I got an apartment, I got a job, I was shacked up with my boyfriend, and I got pregnant, and I was, you know, young. I was 18 years old. When I had my first kid, I was 19 years old, and, you know, and I tried to do the right thing, because by this time, at 19, I'm not completely off the rails yet. You know, I'm, you know, still doing what I'm supposed to be doing most of the time. And, you know, my friends started coming home from school because, you know, they all did what they were supposed to do. You know, we all talk about, like, you know, your lower companions. I was always the lower companion, so that we're clear. You know, I always got my friends to do things that, you know, we shouldn't. I was always stealing from my parents, you know, stealing money, stealing cars, lying, throwing raging parties at my house, you know, when my parents would go to Chile for a month and leave my older brother in charge, which was a really bad idea because, you know, I'm throwing a raging party and my whole house would get destroyed. You know, windows broken, my parents' stuff stolen, cops showing up, and, you know, that's how parties were in the Valley. I don't know if anybody lived in the Valley, but that's how we did it. We went from party to party to party, and there was no cell phone, no pagers. It was like if you got lost with your friends, it was over. You're like, okay, I'm done. I'm gonna, you know, what am I gonna do? So, you know, they come home from school, and so we all had these fake IDs, and we start going to the clubs, you know. And it was, you know, Splash this night. God, I'm so aging myself. And it was, you know, the Red Onion. I don't know if anybody remembers going to the Red Onion. Woo-hoo. And, you know, we thought we, like, owned the place, right? And so, and we did that for a long time, and I really never, ever had a lot of really bad consequences. When I was 15 years old and I was in that lockdown facility, my boyfriend at the time, he was also 15, and he tried to, you know, break me out of the, you know, the prison, whatever he thought it was. And he shattered this giant window inside the facility. And there's a reason why I tell this story. It wasn't so much that, you know, I didn't jump out the window and we ran off. It didn't, nothing like that happened, but this is the kind of people I was associated with. So, you know, we're doing this whole club thing. I run into that. I'm married to someone else now, to the father of my son. I know it's complicated, but it is what it is. And so I, what happened? I run into that kid who tried to break me out of the facility. And, you know, it was like, bam, love at first sight or second sight. And, you know, we started fooling around and hanging out. And he was a different drinker than I was. You know, he was way more advanced in his disease. And he was doing things like, you know, I'm going to go out for a pack of smokes and end up in Guadalajara, Mexico for 3 months. How you do that, I'm not really sure. I don't even know how you get in or how you get out without a passport. And, you know, now wasn't, I never, he didn't grow up like that either. He was also a silver spoon fed kid. And, but he drank a lot. He did. He was doing things that I never knew of. And, you know, we started this little dance. And I really tried at that time in my life to be a good parent, you know, to my son, and not to go out every single night. But when you have no life skills and you are alcoholic and you have no spiritual program, you kind of just, you know, it is what it is, right? And what happened? So we started doing this thing. I get pregnant with my second son, and we start doing this dance. You know, I'm like 19 years old, and, you know, we'd be together, break up. You know, I had my son when I was 22, and it was a constant bad situation. I never went back to my parents' house. I never asked them for anything. They weren't willing to even give me anything, even if I asked, you know. I just did what I had to do. And, you know, he was in the movie business, and he was in the movie business, or his dad was in the movie business. He was, you know, really popular, or not popular, but he was, you know, he had won Emmys on all these shows, and, you know, so he was starting to do that. But when you're an alcoholic of this type, things just don't work out, even if they're handed to you, you know. And so I get pregnant, we move in together, bad idea, and he starts doing what he normally does, you know, going in and out. And, you know, I know nothing. I mean, I knew a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous from the seed that was planted when I was 15 years old, but I really didn't. And he would, you know, disappear for weeks, days, and I didn't really get it, but it was starting to become very painful. And so I decided that it would be a good idea for us to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because his drinking was definitely affecting my happiness. And so we go to AA, and I'm 22 years old, and we go to a meeting in the Valley, because that's where we live, and it was license session. And Melissa, I don't know where she's at, but yeah, I've known her for 25 plus years. And so we go to this meeting, and I was like, no. This is so lame, and I do not identify with any of these people. But I knew he had to be there, right? So what happened while we were in this meetings, and this group was very much like you guys. You know, you guys do watches, and you guys are kind of like a baby PG, I think, right? Or no? Should I not say that? I'm sorry. But you do a lot of the stuff that we do at Pacific Group, right? We do the watches and all the parties, and they did all that. And you know, he got very active in that situation, and I was sober, not working a program, not even really believing I was an alcoholic. And if you're an alcoholic like me with no spiritual program and no alcohol, well, I commit felonies. And yeah. And so I went and started doing these really crazy stuff. I was, you know, like going into stores and filling up the shopping cart and just walking out, you know, full. And I mean, I started smash and grab before it was even popular, okay? So, but, and it's crazy because You know, back then, you actually went to jail, and they kept you in jail. You didn't just get to go home when, you know, they give you a ticket. Like, you went to jail, you know? And so I was doing all this crazy behavior. I was doing a lot of mail fraud. I would go into people's mailboxes all streets. I don't even know how I learned how to do all this. But I was doing credit card forgeries. I was just so reckless. I was obsessed with stealing Legos. And I don't know if that's because I was mental, right? I think I was mental a little bit, but, you know, I would just go into, like, Target and just fill the car up with Legos and then go home and then put them in the closet. Nobody was building the Legos, okay? That's what I was doing. And then I had another section in the closet with, like, young people won't know what this is either, with a bunch of VCRs. Right, like a whole bunch. Not like I was gonna put them on Facebook Marketplace and then sell them. There was none of that. I was just nuts. And but what happened to me is I kept getting arrested, right? And then I would spend like 2 or 3 days in jail, and then I had to get bailed out. And it was like just this constant, you know, things. And then I was still not drinking. Right? And I was literally the person in Alcoholics Anonymous that would tell you, oh, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You don't have to go to 7 meetings in 7 weeks. Don't read the big book. That big book is stupid. You know, and I was so toxic that all the old timers would keep all the newcomers away from me because I was like nuts. And, you know, but I'm sober. One time I went to jail, and I was in there, and I was, you know, talking about I'm sober and how my life is great. And this one girl in there goes, if your life is so great, what are you doing in here? I'm like, well, that was a mistake. And, yeah, it was bad. I was so insane. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to talk for, well, I mean, I got a little bit left. But so I went to, so I got arrested this last time. But this time, they caught me with, like, several different identifications, none of them belonging to me. And then they started doing, like, their detective work and putting it all together. And there was, you know, a case over here and a case over there and all this stuff. And, you know, I'm like, sorry. And, you know, I got an attorney, and they thought it would be a good idea for me to go into the mental institution so it would be good for my case. So I go into the mental institution, and then as soon as I went in there, I said, oh, no, no, this is a mistake. I made a mistake. I need to check myself out. So they had a panel of doctors. This is so stupid. They had a panel of doctors, and they all said no, 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 and no. Like, you need to be here. I mean, I really didn't think I was, like, that crazy, but other people, like, saw that I was losing it. And so I'm in there for, you know, a while. And while I was in that mental institution, my ex-husband, by this time I have a daughter now too, right? So now I have my son, my second son, and my daughter. And I'm 3 years sober. Well, not sober, I'm just 3 years dry. And I go to, while I'm in jail, he decides that it's a good idea for him to go out and drink. And so I get out of jail, and he's, you know, doing his runs because that's what we do. And so I do something else stupid. So then I took a bunch of, so when I got out of that mental institution, they gave me a bunch of pills, you know, to, you know, whatever, I don't even know what kind of pills. I'm not a pill head, so I don't know. So they gave me all these pills, and then I thought it would be a good idea to take all these pills so that I could, you know, make him come home and feel sorry for me. So I took all the pills, and then I laid some out, but I knew my mother-in-law was coming over, so I wouldn't really die, right? I just wanted to pretend like I was going to die. And so she comes over, and instead of her, you know, calling 911, she calls my family. Okay, so my family are a bunch of crazy Chileans, and so they all come over, all, and my aunt's slapping me, and get her up, and blah, 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 and if, you know, and then my uncle looks at me, and he says, we need to take her to the hospital, and if they had waited any longer, you would have a different speaker here tonight, because my heart would have stopped, And so I go in the hospital, and they pump my stomach, and they pour the charcoal, whatever. Oh, it's really bad. And so then, what happened then? They're about to release me, and my mom tells the doctor, she did this with the kids in the house. Done. Mandatory lockdown, 45 days, right? They're just like, no. And so I go back into the mental institution, and I got out at 3 o'clock, 45 days later, and by 7 o'clock, I was drunk. And I'm going to tell you that my alcoholism and my drinking was a different animal at this point. It was no longer about having fun, you know, looking cute, going out with my friends. It was straight up drinking 24/7. I'm going to say 2 months into that, I started doing other stuff, smoking crack, and sorry, it was bad, but it was good while I was doing it. So, I know, I'm sorry. I'm 100% alcoholic. I mean, that is what is my main thing, but these other things I felt like maybe just rushed me into AA a lot faster than if I had not been doing them. And my whole life took a different turn, you know, and now we're in the house with the three kids, and we're both doing the same stuff. It's 24 drinking. I mean, you know, I am very family oriented, and my family is very, very close. And for a long period of time while I was out there doing what I was doing, I couldn't make any plans because I didn't know if I was going to be up for 3 or 4 days, you know, seeing things on the walls and looking out my blinds for, you know, 6 days straight. So I couldn't make any plans, and my world got really, really, really small. You know, and all these things started happening. You know, we were fighting a lot, and, you know, I'm pretty mouthy, so, you know, and, I mean, I just don't like to take shit, you know what I mean? And so, you know, we were physically fighting. I mean, it was ugly. And I tell you guys, I was not raised like that. You know, I was not raised in a violent environment. I have a really good family. No one in my family, well, I mean, I'm Chilean. Almost all Chileans are alcoholics, but if you're Chilean, I'm sorry. You know, my grandmother died from cirrhosis, or she had a throat cancer. There's a lot of alcoholism in our family, but it's like when you do it socially, even though you drink a lot, it's different than what I was doing, you know, and there'd be times that we lived in a two-story apartment, and he'd be acting crazy, and he would go out to the balcony, so I would lock him out of the balcony, right? And then, all of a sudden, I'd go to the balcony, and I'm like, where the hell is he? Like, dude, he just jumped, see ya. You know, we were crazy. And so this led to a whole world of I was really gross, and I was a really bad mother, and, you know, my kids would get up in the morning, and they would look around the corner, and then if they saw a bunch of alcohol everywhere, you know, they knew that it was going to be a bad day, right? And, you know, I would go, I mean, this is so crazy. I mean, I would go to Sepulveda in the middle of the night at like 4 o'clock in the morning with a big ass TV, and this is way before flat screens, guys, okay? Big. And go sell that so that I could get drugs by myself, okay? Think about that. You know how dangerous that is? I mean, I've had guns pulled on me. I'm just lucky nothing ever happened to me. But I was really, really grimy. And I would, you know, get these guys' numbers so that I could call them so I didn't have to go take my big-ass TV to, you know, I mean, I sold all my stuff. Any kind of jewelry I had, gone. Any kind of anything, gone. My house literally was a disaster. I was drinking so much. I was about 200 pounds, and I had my face was yellow, and I had like craters all in my face. I was completely unrecognizable. I had ripped up all the mirrors out of my house because one day I'm walking by the mirror and I'm like, oh my gosh, who's in my house, right? It was bad. And I tried to go get sober. I tried to go to NA, I tried to go to CA, I tried to go to all A's, nothing was working. Like, I was dying. So I go back to that original home group, right? Because he's doing whatever he's doing and I'm like, it's bad. And I go back to that original home group where I had known people for 3 years. I was there for 3 years. And so I'd walk up to them and they'd say, hi, I'm so-and-so. And I'd say, hi, I'm Claudia. And they would go, oh my God. I mean, I was like completely unrecognizable. They were like not nice about it. They would say, we should get a picture of Claudia of how she looks now and what she looks like when, you know, before, and show you what happens when you go out. And I'm like, really? So rude. It was so rude. So I go to, I'm in this group for 6 months, and I'm dying. Like, I want to drink and use every single day. Every single day. There wasn't 1 minute that I wasn't struggling. And I went out one last time, and I had about 6 months, but I went out, and then I had to go to the meeting the next day because I had a Kate commitment, and I had to, you know, say, I'm Claudia, I'm an alcoholic, I have 11 hours of sobriety. And from that point to this point, I haven't had one desire to drink or do anything that affects me from the neck up. And for that, it's like, I'm so grateful because it just makes it so much easier when you don't have that obsession to drink. It was just gone, right? And, you know, I decided that that group, I needed to be around more women. There was a lot of men in that group, and I needed to be around women with sobriety because I was so sick. I was sick, sick, sick. And so I went to Pacific Group, and I got a sponsor. Sharon was my sponsor for about 24 years, and I followed her everywhere. I did everything that she told me to do. She was speaking somewhere, I would go there. She was over here, I just did everything. You know, I was, I had to leave that marriage because I knew that if I stayed, that I would drink again. So I had to pack up my kids, leave my home. It was all jacked up anyway, but I had to leave not my beautiful home, but my home, and move into a little tiny apartment with my three kids. And, you know, we were good. We were just good. And I got myself a little job, and I'm going to PG, and I'm Little Miss AA. I'm going to the yard every Saturday. I'm doing all my meetings. I run childcare at the Saturday night meeting. I'm about 3.5 years sober. And that man, the father of my kids, you know, he couldn't get sober. He just kept going in and out, in and out, in and out, going to jail, doing whatever he was doing. And one day, he drank and used, and he shot and killed his father. And, you know, he adored his father. Like, he loved him more than anyone in this world. So I'm pretty sure he didn't, like, wake up that morning and say, you know, I think I'll drink today, and then I'm going to go out and commit murder, you know? He also killed his girlfriend that day. Yeah, it was gnarly. And so, you know, I'm 3.5 years sober. That happened on a Sunday, and a Tuesday, I was at my regular Tuesday night Ohio Street meeting. You know, thank God for strong sponsorship, because my sponsor at the time did not let me change anything. I just kept doing what I was doing. You know, I was crying every day. I mean, try telling that to your kids, that their father has just shot and killed their grandfather. You know, and that's like my old sponsor used to talk about seconds and inches. Right? Had I been still with that man, I would have been the girlfriend. I mean, I wouldn't even be here today. You know, who knows what would have happened. And, you know, I just kept going forward. And, you know, and then that happened when I was about 3.5 years sober. And I was tough, man. You know, because people come to AA and they get their life back together and they get their house and their car and their mate. And then I'm like, this is bullshit. And so, you know, I was pissed. I was, like, angry about it because I figured, you know, I had to do everything. I had no child support. I did all of it on my own. And, you know, and then I look back now, and I never did anything on my own. You know, I did it with all the women in Alcoholics Anonymous that, like, carried me through all that, you know. And then I was, about 4.5 years sober, maybe. Maybe 4 years sober. I was very new. And then I saw this giant, gorgeous man. And I'm like, hello. And, you know, and he was only 90 days sober. I know, isn't, that's terrible. Don't do that, girls. Don't do that. I got lucky. It doesn't normally end that way. And, you know, and we, oops. And I don't regret it at all. Sorry, I don't. You know, we've had a lot of things, you know, 22 years together, you know, a lot of things happen. And like he said, you know, the kids consider him his dad, their dad. You know, we have, my middle son just is on his second kid, so we're grandparents, right? And, you know, even though my kids were little when I got sober this last time, I mean, they weren't that little, but they kind of were small enough where they don't really remember how bad it was, except for my older son, he does. You know, my grandkids, our grandkids look at us like we're just everything. You know, we've been able to really, you know, I wouldn't have never been able to do it without him. You know, he's been to all the mommy and their daddy and mommy dance, or daddy and daughter dances, and every single football game. And, you know, like our kids are all athletes, so basketball, everything. He has been there for us for everything. You know, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I got here, I was broken, right? I was a disgusting human being, like just really disgusting. And by coming here, I'm a totally different person. You know, I have a really good career, and like people actually want to be like me. I mean, when does that happen? That never happens to people like us, right? And, you know, little by little, you know, things, you know, we had a rough patch not too long ago, and we've been able to, because of, you know, sponsorship and working the steps and doing what we're supposed to be doing here, we've been able to get on the other side of it. You know, if you're new, you are in a really, really good place here. You know, you've got some awesome people. You know, Tracy and I go back 26 years. We were in the same class, and now you've got what? Sorry, I gotta call you out because you're kind of bossy. You're kind of bossy, so I'm gonna call you out. We got sober together. We've vacationed together. We've been through all of the stuff that I've been talking about, her divorce and my murder and all this stuff. I mean, you know, we have to laugh about it now. I used to not be able to talk about that without crying. But if you're new, just, you know, grab a sponsor, you know, and make some friends here, because a lot of times our friends are the ones that pull us out of that yucky where we can't talk to our sponsors because we're embarrassed. You know, trust me when I tell you, there's someone in here that has done anything you've done worse, you know, and I am just, I can't ever repay, like Bob said, Alcoholics Anonymous, because my life is completely different. And again, if you're new, I really want to welcome you. Thanks.